Grade 6 Conference, Lecture 26, What to Teach in the Astronomy Block. If I may just give a few books that I think can be helpful to you, the sort of basic text for teachers of a good outline of what to teach in astronomy and how to set about it is the classic book on teaching astronomy in the Waldorf School Plan by Hermann von Baravalle, the great German mathematician who made his way to the United States and was active in forming schools like Highland Hall and the Waldorf School of Garden City. Also, he's the individual who developed the geometry curriculum on which we draw in grade 6. So Baravalle's book is good. One warning, be sure that you get the most recent edition of it, which I believe has been published by Rudolf Steiner College Press, because older editions have mistakes. I think they're mostly mistakes in translation, but mistakes nonetheless. And more recent ones have been carefully revised. Another important figure in the teaching of astronomy in the Waldorf School is Norman Davidson, a colleague of mine at Sunbridge College, where we co-directed the program in teacher training. And Norman has written two very good books, one of them more technical, the other more suited for someone who's just learning it to teach other children. So I'd recommend his work as well. And thirdly, the unlikely figure of H.A. Rey, R-E-Y, sound familiar? The author of the Curious George books. He also was a passionate amateur astronomer, and with his witty and charming illustrative powers, did a wonderful pictorial guide to teaching, or at least learning astronomy, but I also found it very helpful in teaching. So those three books, if you feel you need one or the other, or all of them, or none of them, I would speak highly of them. And I also would just like to give you a sort of leading thought about all of this. I would say that in astronomy, if you have to err on one side or the other, err on the side of inspiration and not on the side of constellation. Now, what I mean by this is that there is a tendency in the teaching of astronomy, which I'm not sure quite how it got there, but it's there very strongly, that a good deal of the work is teaching the children to learn about the constellations in the night sky. And this has become such a given in teaching astronomy that Mercurius even sells main lesson books that are specifically designed for astronomy and that have black pages. And then you're supposed to buy silver felt-tip pens so that the students can make the stars, make silver dots in these books, and then connect them with lines and write the name of the constellation below it, perhaps identifying some significant stars or maybe trying to do a kind of sketch around those lines to fill out the image. Okay, we'll see about that. But then, of course, that's not enough. This always has to be taken a little bit further. You know, it can take a student 15 minutes, half an hour to draw a constellation. Okay, that takes care of today's main lesson book segment. We have another one to draw tomorrow, another one the day after. It's great because very likely you're not doing too many of those illustrations on the board. They're getting them from photocopies or from a book or something like that. That immediately lightens the workload. And here's a better idea still. Why don't we have every student in the class choose a constellation and give a report on it? Here we go. Reports. So that they have to describe where it is in the sky, what season is optimum for viewing it, and then, of course, tell us about the myth that led to that, be it Perseus, Cassiopeia, Hercules, Orion, and so on and so forth. Wow. Then we don't even have to teach main lesson for a few days, a week and a half of the astronomy block, depending on class size, can be dedicated to the children giving reports on the constellations. Well, it takes all of about 5 minutes for them to describe where the constellation is in the sky and when you can see it. The rest of their report is the myth. The myth. Aren't most of those myths Greek myths? Hold on. This is grade 6. Why are they rehashing Greek myths? Certainly, very much at the beginning of Roman history, we do a bit of that, but we're going forward. We're not looking back to Greek myths. What does that have to do with the nature of the sixth grader? Absolutely nothing. What does that have to do with the kind of public schoolization of Waldorf education? Everything. Putting the education of the students in their own hands, giving them this kind of mindless work, and connecting dots on black paper. Come on. Can't we do a little bit better than that? So, I am going to suggest to you some other ways of looking at this subject. Now, because it is so visual, I'm not bringing a lot in these audio files, but rather in the slideshow on astronomy, I'll be filling out, fleshing out a lot of what I'm bringing right now and showing you how the students themselves interpret it and present it. But I want to say this, that certainly in this astronomy block, we want the children to know that you have to look up to see the stars. We want them to be very connected to the apparent movement of the stars in the heavens, to the apparent movement of the planets in the sky, the relationship of stars and planets, and of course the wonderful rhythmical relationship of those three important cosmic bodies, the sun, the moon, and our own Earth. Definitely, all of that is very important, and a lot of it, as we'll see, is based on observation. Unaided eye observation, which means even if you have a dad in the class who's an enthusiastic amateur astronomer, or even if you have an astronomy association nearby, which traditionally likes to work with Waldorf kids, taking them out one night to view the stars, that's well and good. But do that very much at the end of the block, or even do it later on in the year. Perhaps you're doing the block in the fall, lots of cloudy nights, whereas in the winter, the sky is pristine and crystalline. It's a good time to watch. So certainly there's no reason not to use a telescope or two or binoculars to view the stars. But that is a small part. And if you can't do that, if it doesn't happen, pedagogically, it's of no significance whatsoever. So we're not talking about, working with lenses any more than we're talking about working in botany with microscopes. We don't need to do that. There'll be plenty of time in the Waldorf High School or in another high school or college if anybody's really interested in that. But we do want the children to trust their senses to trust their eyes, and from what they see with their eyes, what is visible to them, what they can know and understand, to be able to extend that into other places and other times. And I would say that one of the most critical aspects of teaching astronomy to sixth graders is extrapolation. Extrapolation. This is one of the most important things that we are teaching them all together in grade six above all, but for the rest of their career in the Waldorf School. How to know something, understand something, and use that something, use that knowledge, that concept, that skill as a springboard for understanding things that you cannot directly know or see or experience. And to trust the power of extrapolation to know that it's going to be accurate, that you can have the same degree of inner certainty that you are right about something extrapolated as you do about something that you are directly experiencing. This is a gift that we can give to sixth graders. And astronomy, we could say, is the wrapping for that gift. This subject is really about giving the young people their very first experiences in thinking like modern people, in approaching the experience of the consciousness soul. This is what astronomy is about. And if we just spend our time, or may I say waste our time, teaching them constellations, we're really defeating the very purpose that astronomy is taught. So I cannot emphasize this enough, that it is really an experience in thinking. I'm going to describe some of this to you in the third audio file on astronomy, and then I urge you to go on to the video, the slideshow of student work, in which I go more deeply into the exact experiences that the students are having. But I just want to bring up one other thing that I would say is not really essential to the subject, and that's making models. You know, for example, showing the students an eclipse by using three balls and having a flashlight shine on them or something like that. You know, models fall so totally short, very, very far short of the reality of what we're trying to depict, that in many ways they're either very confusing to some children or they tend to fix an image, they harden an image in the child's soul, and it's very hard for them to be flexible and extrapolatory about what they're experiencing. You yourselves probably, when you were young, were taken off to a science museum or perhaps one of the few very fine planetariums in the United States, and there you saw models of the solar system. Think of that model that you saw. It's very, very hard for you to shake that image of these planets, and there were more planets in those days than there are now, revolving around the sun. You know, with a fixed sun and everything revolving around it. Is that really the way it is? Isn't that sun itself moving as a star in a galaxy, spinning as part of a gigantic spiral? So the sun should be pictured as moving, almost as moving around the planets, even as they move around the sun. But a fixed model will give you only that, fixity. So we want to teach fluidity, flexibility. We want to teach the stars as something that moves in a predictable manner without being mechanical. How do we do that? let's look at some aspects of this class in the next lecture.